how much of a crisis would Brexit really be for the UK's financial sector? And what's all this we hear about the City of London losing its passport? Welcome to a Vox Talks special on economics after the EU referendum. On the phone is Patricia Jackson, who is a non-executive director of the digital challenger bank Atom and an advisor to Ernst & Young. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Could you give a sense of the reaction in the financial services sector to the vote to leave the EU?
The banks have reacted, I think, very negatively to the whole Brexit outcome. I think it was a shock, and they're trying to grapple with the effects for the industry. I think asset management is more split, and I think the hedge funds are more split. They may be less affected in a number of different ways.
Is there a sense that some hedge funds and asset managers might have hedged themselves in such a way that they might gain in the short term?
I think it's more about the global operations of a firm. If you look at the effects that Brexit would have on banks, of course, they do a lot of cross-border activity, a number of them doing cross-border retail activity, but many are wholesale. I think the asset management industry and hedge funds are possibly more self-contained within London. I think that the effect on bank profitability is potentially more because you're talking about a much lower interest rate environment lasting for longer. So bank profits are under pressure already. Bank ROE is under pressure already. Pressure from investors to get the ROEs higher. Then not accepted that higher capital in the banking system equates to lower ROEs. So the banking sector is, I think, under more pressure.
Looking to the broader economy and the financial services sector, particularly in the UK and its impact on the broader economy, one detail that's been debated a lot has been passporting. Please could you give an overview of what this means and what the key issues are?
Yes, passporting has really come to the surface in terms of the type of agreement that the UK strikes with the EU on exit. Currently, if you are established as a bank in an EU country, and that means you might be an indigenous bank in that country, or you might be a US or Japanese bank that has a subsidiary in that country, you have free right to establish a branch in another country, and you have free right to do cross-border activity. So one question is, what happens if the EU on exit doesn't agree to passporting rights in the future? The Norwegian arrangement with the EEA does allow passporting, but that's at the price of accepting migration. So let's suppose the UK cannot agree passporting for the city in the future after exit. How important is that? And I think one issue here is, what proportion of major banks established in the UK from outside countries like Japan, like the US, actually have a subsidiary already somewhere else in the EU? So they have a subsidiary in London and they have one or more elsewhere. It's actually a very high percentage. I looked at a sample and it's 75%. So one of the first questions is, could they use that subsidiary to do the cross-border activity to get the passporting that they need to get? Another question is, well, how much of the business that's being done in London is anyway wholesale? And it's very difficult to stop wholesale financial transactions gravitating to the most attractive market. It would be very difficult to prevent a multinational company from going on borrowing from a bank in London. Almost impossible to stop a EU bank laying off its positions through London or doing other sorts of hedging transactions or derivatives transactions through London. So I think the conclusion I've reached, having looked at it, what becomes extremely important is the ongoing attractiveness of London as a financial centre. And that's really, I think, one thing that the authorities have to really think through carefully. How do they maintain the attractiveness of London? And if London is still an extremely attractive area to do business, I think a lot of transactions will still flow through London. But also there are provisions in the MiFID, the Market in Financial Instruments Directive, which allow cross-border access by banks established outside the EU to exchanges, to clearing houses, to clearance and settlement systems. And I think the authorities need to make sure, as far as they can, that those MiFID arrangements continue in the future. So, A, trying to get passporting is important for the authorities, if they can do it. B, maintaining the attractiveness of London is crucial. And C, trying to work within the context of the current directives to make sure that where there is access for third countries, that access continues.
It sounds a little bit like the fear of mass exodus from the city is premature.
I think it is very premature. I think when you look at the activities that are done here, a lot of it is wholesale. It's the laying off and hedging of positions. And I think it's unlikely that that would be affected myself. I think a lot of people have within their groups anyway subsidiaries that they can use for the passporting. They may have to look at some redistribution of staff, but people need to avoid, I think, a knee-jerk reaction. They need to wait and see and just think through how could they use different parts of the group that already exists. And then I think the authorities have got to keep sort of front and centre of their minds, how do you ensure the continuing attractiveness of London?
So it seems what you're saying is that passporting might not be as important an issue as some people have suggested because of the wholesale activities of many banks. Could you please give us some more detail as to why that's the case?
Well, London is the largest unsecured interbank in the world. It's, I think, the largest or the second largest foreign exchange market in the world. It's got the huge derivatives transactions. And it is very difficult to stop the flow of those wholesale activities. I can remember a time when certain EU countries had rules that if you dealt with their retail customers, those transactions in equities had to go across their bourse. They couldn't go through another market. But what happened was that the transactions went through the bourse, for example. Then firms were laying off the batch positions through London. So you're not going to stop your banks laying off and hedging their positions through the largest derivative market in the world. Obviously, it would be better to retain passporting. But if you can't retain passporting, then I think the damage will not be as great as maybe people think. But the key thing is retaining the attractiveness of London.
Coming to the attractiveness of the City of London, will that be affected by EU regulation and the fact that the UK, if it leaves the EU, will no longer have a say on that?
I think that the UK obviously could diverge from EU regulation. In fact, if you look at banking, for example, the capital rules are underpinned by the Basel Accords, and that will stop significant drift. The UK authorities have made it quite clear that they don't intend to significantly diverge. Now, the UK, in application of the rules, has always been rather different. If you look at the treatment of Pillar 2 under Basel 2 and the treatment of risks in the round, the UK has been more active in requiring Pillar 2 capital. But then the SSM with the ECB is now going down a very similar route. So I can't see a big divergence in rules. Where there are rules say, in the conduct area that they really feel are inappropriate, I guess they would probably try and adjust them in London. But trying to get to more of a common platform of rules would be one of the things that would make the UK more attractive.
Are there any details here that are being overlooked or missed in the debate?
I think the main area that we haven't covered is this knock-on effect into bank profitability, but that's not just UK banks, that is European banks in general. I think the uncertainty created by Brexit, the likelihood of longer quantitative easing, does affect the profitability of the business models, and banks are already under strain. And we're seeing that the pressures on rate of return on equity, the drive from the investors for ROEs to go back up to 10 or 15% is really affecting the business models. We are seeing people coming out of business lines across Europe, globally as well. And I think the Brexit answer exacerbates that.
So is there a short-term solution to this problem?
Well, I think Mark Carney has moved swiftly to remove some of the capital requirements, the extra capital requirements that were in place for banks operating in the UK over and above the straight Pillar 1 requirements. I think that's helpful. One question is all the continuing change coming out of Basel. So we've had Basel 3, we've had really substantial increases in the quantity of equity that the banks had to hold, which had to happen. But when you look at the compendium of change that they're currently looking at, going beyond Basel III, so we've got more trading book rules, we've got more rules on interest rate risk in the banking book, we've got new operational risk charges, we've got question marks about the IRB. All of that, I think, in this environment is extremely unhelpful to drive capital yet higher.
Looking at the long term, one concern is that the decision to leave the European Union will lead to the gradual deterioration of the City of London. In your view, is that realistic?
I think it's a question about gravity, really. Things gravitate to huge markets for good reason. I think the gap between London and the other financial centres in Europe is huge. And I think this does come down to this core question of the attractiveness of London. And I think that's why that has to be a real area of focus by the authorities. That raises issues about gold plating of capital requirements. It raises issues about infrastructure spending and tax regimes and so on.
Please, could you clarify what you mean by gold plating?
So one of the issues that's been raised in the past regarding London is that the authorities tended to add to the minimum requirements extra requirements.
Finally, what one piece of advice do you have for the UK's negotiators and decision makers?
Well, for the negotiators, I think they obviously need to get the best deal they can on the passporting, and they certainly need to look to the rights under pieces of European legislation such as MiFID, access to exchanges and so on. And for the authorities in general, they've really got to constantly be aware of how attractive London is as a centre to carry out business.
Patricia Jackson, thank you very much.
Thank you.